My name is Dana Roque. I'll be speaking about the evaluation of perinatal hepatitis B virus infections reported to the National Notifiable Disease Surveillance System, NNDSS, for infants born in 2005. And I'm here on behalf of my colleagues and co-authors, Sandra Rausch, Lisa Jacques Carroll, Anne-Marie Wasley, and Susan Wang. So briefly, I would like to discuss the background to perinatal hepatitis, move quickly to the objectives, methods, results of this particular evaluation, and then hopefully provide you with some recommendations. So hepatitis is truly a public health concern. The literature would state that worldwide there are probably more than 350 million chronic carriers, and in the US alone, probably more than 1.2 million. In 2005, there were approximately 24,000 infants born to HBV-infected mothers here in the US. Now, the natural history of hepatitis is very dependent on age at time of infection. So while as infections that occur in adulthood are likely to convalesce, those occurring during the perinatal period tend to move on into chronicity. So without immunoprophylaxis, approximately 40% of infants born to HBV-infected mothers in the US will develop chronic infection. And probably 25% of those with chronic infection are at risk for dying prematurely, either due to liver cancer or cirrhosis. So what mechanisms do we have in place for preventing these infections? Well, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has recommended universal vaccination since 1991 and has recommended the birth dose since 2005. In a very perfect world, we could screen all pregnant women in this country and therefore identify at-risk infants to provide them with post-exposure prophylaxis. This consists of not only the birth dose vaccine, but administration of immune globulin as well for immediate passive immunity. And of course, throughout childhood, continuation of the vaccine series. Post-exposure prophylaxis is highly efficacious. It prevents vertical and horizontal transmission. Vaccine alone, probably 70 to 95% of cases, and with the addition of the immune globulin, probably 85 to 95%. So towards this end, the perinatal HBV prevention program was crafted in 1990. It's composed of 64 grantees, 50 states, 6 cities, 8 territories, and it's funded by CDC's, what is now the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Broadly speaking, the goals are to prevent HBV infections in at-risk infants through case management strategies and to identify those perinatal infections that do occur. So schematically, the activities of the perinatal prevention program begin with identification of surface antigen positive women and therefore their at-risk infants, with hopefully the provision of appropriate prophylaxis, followed by post-vaccination testing, whereby we'd find the infected infants and those that remain susceptible. So how is it that infected infants are reported? Well, the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists has come up with a formal definition, which includes hepatitis surface antigen positive infants aged 1 to 24 months, born to surface antigen positive mothers in the US or territories. There are currently 2 surveillance mechanisms in place, the first of which being the perinatal HBV prevention program, which since 1996 has asked that grantees report aggregate cases through what is called the perinatal assessment, which is essentially an annual survey. This is within the immunization program division. Now there's also NNDSS reporting since 2002, whereby states report individual cases within the communicable disease division. So just to provide you with a little background on what exactly the perinatal assessment is, it's actually a very useful tool and it encompasses a lot of different items. Those that we focused on for this particular evaluation, there's a question about the number of infants born to surface antigen positive women who did receive the proper immunoprophylaxis and post-vaccination serologic testing and who happened to be surface antigen positive, and then the number of these infants that were believed to have been reported to NNDSS. So this is another schematic that represents the flow of information. As you can see, information from healthcare providers, laboratories, and other sources flows to the perinatal program and the communicable disease division with differing amounts of communication between them. And then either through the perinatal assessment or NNDSS, or hopefully both, this information then flows to the CDC. So what has been the history of these reported cases? Well, there are two striking things about this slide. From years 2001 through 2004, you'll notice that the number of cases reported annually is quite low for both databases. The second thing that you should notice is that the number of cases between the two varies quite greatly. 90 on average per year in the perinatal assessment and only about 38 in NNDSS. So this prompted the particular evaluation we're discussing today. We sought to identify the perinatal HBV infections captured by each database, describe the discrepancies between the two databases, formulate strategies to improve reporting accuracy and completeness, and then examine the potential effect of case reconciliation on database concordance. So first, we did identify those cases. Now, within NNDSS, we searched for perinatal event code, which is 10104, for the reporting period of January 1st, 2005 through March 29th, 2007. And then within the perinatal assessment, cases were reported by the grantees. This was submitted by April 30th of 2007. And then grantees that reported one or more cases were asked to provide additional demographic information and NNDSS IDs for case verification and comparison. Second, we embarked on the case reconciliation process. Cases captured by both of these databases were matched using date of birth and or the NNDSS ID, plus or minus gender or race. Perinatal coordinators were then made aware of any discrepancies between the number of cases identified in their assessment versus those actually reported to NNDSS. We then looked at the reporting errors. We classified them, quantified them, and then we assessed the post-reconciliation database concordance. NNDSS line listings were re-examined in October of 2007, following what is approximately the close of data for calendar year 2005. So what is it that we found? Well, firstly, there were discrepancies in the number of infants captured by each of these databases. All comers within the perinatal assessment, there was an N of 86, and within NNDSS, 61. There were also many errors and incompleteness of the data, which I categorized broadly into two forms, first of which being failures to meet the case definition. There were many infants who were not born in 2005 yet reported. Also, we noticed many maternal infections were miscoded as perinatal cases, and or maternal date of birth was provided in place of the infants. Perinatal cases were also reported as chronic or acute hepatitis, and some of these infants were indeed foreign-born. Other things we observed, there were duplicate entries. In many cases, data was insufficient. There was incomplete or incorrect reporting of critical variables that prevented case verification. And then there was human error, false positives. Retrospectively, some cases were found to have been submitted just simply in error. So this is an important slide here that illustrates the infections that were reported by each database. And as you'll see, for the perinatal assessment, 86 all comers. Upon further investigation, we excluded 18 from that number, 7 because they failed to meet date of birth in 2005, 4 were false positives, and 7 there was insufficient data. That left us with 68 verified cases, 11% of which were found to have incorrect or unreported race, and 1% or one case that had an incorrect gender. On the flip side, in NNDSS, there were 61 reported cases initially. 14 of which were excluded. One infant was found to be foreign-born. 9 mothers were reported. 3 had insufficient data, and there was 1 duplicate entry verified not to be a twin gestation. That left us with 47 verified cases, 34% of which had unreported race, and 4% with unreported date of birth. The reason that that case was able to be verified is because the NNDSS ID provided by the perinatal assessment matched perfectly. So, what did pre-reconciliation database concordance look like? Well, there were at least 73 unique cases across both of these databases, but only 42, or less than 60%, were captured by both. And as you can see, there were 26 that were exclusive to the perinatal assessment and 5 to NNDSS. This wouldn't be an epidemiology lecture if I didn't mention something about demographics. So among those approximately 60% that were captured by both databases, pretty much equal distribution of gender. In terms of racial breakdown, 85% Asian, which is consistent with the higher seroprevalence within that ethnic group. 10% unknown, 2.5% white, 2.5% black. And there were no statistically significant differences between those infants captured by both databases versus those captured by NNDSS alone or the perinatal assessment. So what were some of the reasons that these infants were not reported to NNDSS? In some instances, perinatal cases were mistakenly reported as acute or chronic cases. Some grantees had been unaware, or some states rather, were unaware of the creation of the perinatal category. In many other instances, there were transmission glitches or oversights at the level of information technology. A broad category, which I called other technical difficulty. And then 2 cases only that were known to be pending report and transmission. So we felt it was important to investigate what level of communication routinely occurs between these divisions. So as we were undergoing this evaluation, we thought it useful to ask perinatal coordinators to describe if they did routinely speak with the persons responsible for NNDSS data entry. And what we found was that among the grantees that did have discordances between the databases, only about 40 or 50% reported direct communication. However, among those grantees that had no discordances, about 90% reported routine direct communication. So what did the data look after this process was complete? Well, post-reconciliation, there were now 78 unique cases across both of these databases. 63, or now 81%, captured by both. So we went from 73 to 78 because there were 3 new cases that were found exclusively in NNDSS. And then 2 cases that were originally excluded for lack of sufficient data, but that we were able to later verify. Now you might be asking, why isn't this number 100%? Well, firstly, the annual assessment was closed. There was no way to amend that. And second, we believe that there were still failures to follow up on known transmission glitches. So what are some of the limitations of this particular study? Well, we didn't really comment at all about the states that had 0 reported cases of perinatal HPV, which is a substantial number, 50%. And though we did observe changes in database concordance following the reconciliation process, this is a case of correlation rather than causation, and we cannot attribute those changes in concordance to the intervention alone. So, one, we felt that database concordance is likely to be affected by communication between the divisions. Concordance increased following the case reconciliation process, prior number being 58% concordance, and following reconciliation, 81%. Pre-reconciliation concordance was also greater among grantees that reported direct communication between the divisions. Secondly, we recognize that there are still problems with quality and completeness within both of these databases. Making broad, sweeping generalizations, within the perinatal assessment, cases tend to be reported for the wrong calendar year, and within NNDSS, case definitions are often misinterpreted, meaning maternal cases are reported as perinatal cases, and there's frequent omission of critical variables. Thirdly, the cumulative number of cases among both of these reporting systems is vastly fewer than what estimates would predict. At the 2007 perinatal and HIV grantees meeting, taking into account perhaps 3% failure to complete antenatal testing for maternal seropositivity, 4% failure to administer post-exposure prophylaxis, and maybe a 5% inherent failure of the vaccine, conservative projections suggest that as many as 700 perinatal hepatitis B cases may go unidentified each year. So there's definitely underreporting of these infections. So where does this leave us? I think it becomes quite obvious at this point that the perinatal prevention program and communicable disease staff should work together to ensure that all perinatal HBV infections are reported to both the perinatal assessment and NNDSS. Interestingly, in talking with the grantees, only two perinatal coordinators had access to NNDSS and were able themselves to amend data. We would hope that accurate reporting of infections would help us in assessing our progress towards the goals of eliminating HBV transmission in the United States. Thank you. I'll take any questions, I suppose, at this point.